Hello and welcome to the Money Marketing Podcast. I'm Katie Pigden, the editor of the publication. Thank you for tuning in to this latest episode in our weekend essay series. As a society, generally speaking, we're not very good when it comes to talking about death. Sorry to be so morbid and to stop you in your tracks if you wasn't expecting it. But as advisors know, as difficult as these conversations may be, they are important. Understandably, it's not going to be something we want to think or talk about every day. In this episode, Money Marketing's features writer, Amanda Newman-Smith, explores why we need to normalise death as a part of life. The pandemic has made us think about our own mortality, and some companies tell us they have seen more people interested in taking out life cover. It can often be something we mean to do, but never get around to. I'm sorry if this causes any upset to our listeners. Having lost my dad towards the end of last year, I'm all too familiar with how the slightest thing may trigger an emotional response. But as usual, I'm drawn in by Amanda's way with words, which are both engaging and informative, and I'm confident you will be too. Over to Amanda.
Normalising death as a part of life. When I was a child, we had a family friend who seemed to love a good funeral. She was brought up as a Catholic in Dublin, moved to England as a young woman in the 1950s and married a Londoner. She and her husband lived next door to my grandparents and she was always dropping in for a natter. But ironically, it was when someone local had died that she really came alive. She would tell anecdotes about the funerals she'd attended back home in Ireland. No detail was spared. We heard exactly how the deceased was laid out in their coffin and what kind of spread was laid on at their wake. I must have been about 9 or 10 and I was fascinated by ghosts at that time, so I'd pretend to bury my head in a book about them and just listen to the adults. My mum and my granddad found all this talk ghoulish, so they would disappear to the kitchen, my mum conveniently to make a round of teas, my granddad to grab a cheese sandwich before popping over the road for a pint. By the time they'd emerged, the conversation had moved on to some funny anecdote about the grandchildren. I hadn't thought about any of this for years until I recently spoke to Mercer Private Wealth leader Steve Sands about life insurance. I think it perfectly illustrates how some people don't bat an eyelid when talking about death, while others will do anything to avoid it. Sands and I were discussing trends that Mercer had been seeing since the start of the pandemic, and he mentioned there'd been a significant uptick in clients wanting to take out protection policies. Curious, I wanted to know more. Was that protection across the board or sections of it? I discovered that interest among Mercer's clients has been focused on life cover and key person cover, which Sands sees as a direct result of the pandemic. It was interesting that the latest Term and Health Watch report from Swiss Re highlights a similar trend within personal protection. Sales of protection products were down overall last year compared to the previous year. Not surprising, because people who were struggling financially due to the pandemic needed to reduce their spending, and insurance is something they tend to cut back on. However, sales of new individual term assurance policies, life cover only, bucked this trend and increased by 2.4%. New term assurance policies with critical illness cover did not fare so well, with sales falling by 8.9%. New business protection figures contained in Swiss Re's report did not appear to reflect Mercer's experience in relation to key person cover, however. The number of new term assurance policies used for business protection purposes fell by 43.1% overall. What I found more interesting was the breakdown between policies sold as life cover only and with critical illness. The figures depict a complete reversal of what had happened in the personal protection market, in that life cover only policies fell by 54.7%, while life cover with critical illness policies fell by 6.4%. Not all of us have a business, so a personal life insurance policy is the most obvious and cost-effective way of protecting our loved ones. However, the death of a key person, or that person being diagnosed with a critical illness, will impact the livelihoods of business owners and their families. To me, those Swiss Re figures suggest that firms which went all in by putting cover in place for both risks, not just death, saw the value in keeping their policies going, if they could. As Sands says, most of us have been touched by COVID-19 in some way, and that has brought home to people the fragility of life and the permanence of death. Sands sees this new post-pandemic awareness of life cover as a positive thing to come out of all the darkness that COVID-19 has brought into our lives, and that any uptick in sales is here to stay. Having thought about it on a personal level, I think it looks that way. It's almost like COVID has let the genie of our own mortality out of the bottle. Like many things we've learnt from living through the pandemic, will be hard to go back. You can't not know something you know. Don't get me wrong, talking about death and making the necessary plans will never be pleasant. I don't want to live my life pondering exactly when the Grim Reaper will tap me on the shoulder. Who does? As trite as it sounds, life is for living. Financial advisors up and down the country do an amazing job in ensuring that many people make the most of life, and I'm proud to know so many of them. But death is a fact of life, and you can't have one without the other. Personally, I couldn't bring myself to be as matter-of-fact about death as my former neighbour, who bought himself a funeral plot years in advance of the big event. To me, that takes being organised and planning for the future to a different planet, never mind a different level. Having said that, as a wife and mother, I recognise that I have responsibilities towards my family that must include arrangements for when I, or my husband Dan, are no longer around. This is what we need to get across to all those people who haven't yet taken on board the need for protection. It's not a waste of money, it's not morbid, it's just a part of life. Dan and I are not the most organised people on the whole when it comes to paperwork. We're constantly busy and tend to rip open the post then dump it on top of the microwave until we can deal with it at the weekend. Sometimes we do. Sometimes it sits there until we rummage for something else in the grand pile and we have a purge of it all. But the really important documents, including the life insurance policies, live in our version of the big importance bag that my mum had when I was a child. I was fascinated by this black 1970s handbag with spatula-shaped wooden handles at a young age. This was where my parents kept birth certificates, life insurance policies, bank statements and everything else deemed important. There was nothing of interest in it for a five-year-old, but I was a nosy child and I must have asked my mum what every piece of paper in there was. I was clearly a money marketing journalist in the making. Our version, the green box, came into being when Dan and I were engaged and he needed to have a non-cancerous lump removed from the side of his neck. It was a minor operation, but Dan had never needed surgery before and was adamant that all his financial affairs should be up to date and include me, just in case. The box still sits on the top shelf inside the wardrobe, and we both know that if the worst comes to the worst, everything we need is there. Conversations of this nature don't need to happen every day within families, thank goodness, but they do need to happen. However, the more I think about it, the more I believe that unless there is a trigger like Dan's operation, they probably don't. Which reminds me, I saw a Father's Day card at the weekend, which had some verse on the front which started, "Dad, you won't always be around." I'm not sure many fathers would appreciate that as a prompt to get life cover. Within my own family, the lengths that some relatives have gone to in avoiding conversation about death with their children amaze me. My cousin's goldfish died when he was about six, so rather than explain in an age-appropriate way what had happened, my uncle and aunt drove him all the way to the beach to release it into the sea, just so my cousin could see that the fish was missing his family and was now swimming with his friends. I would never want to tell other parents what to do, as the best people to judge their child's emotional maturity are parents. But I wonder if the reluctance to broach the subject has more to do with the adult's discomfort. I know that within my own extended family, there's a tendency to underestimate children's ability to understand what we think of as adult concepts. As I mentioned earlier, I can vividly remember eavesdropping on conversations not intended for my ears as a child and knowing exactly what they were all about. My own children are exactly the same, so conversations in their presence need to be the verbal equivalent of a postcard. When my beloved grandfather died 8 years ago, we told our almost five-year-old son the truth. Granddad had been a big part of our son's life, so protecting with a blanket of white lies was never an option. To soften the blow, we released a helium balloon into the sky at Tower Bridge, one of my granddad's favourite places, with a picture that Liam had drawn for him pinned to it. Of course, we had lots of questions to contend with. Would Granddad Ron come back to visit us? Simple explanations satisfied Liam, and as children do, he swiftly got back to living in the moment. There's a tendency to assume that anything to do with having a critical illness or the end of life is inevitably sad, scary, or just plain old depressing. So perhaps that's why many people shy away from talking about protection. But it doesn't have to be like that. I'm no rugby fan, but I recently stumbled across an article about the former rugby league player Rob Burrow, who was diagnosed with motor neurone disease in 2019. And told he was unlikely to live longer than 2 years. Burrow is only 38. He has a wife and three young children. He struggles to walk, needs help with everyday tasks like eating and dressing himself, and communicates with a computer mouse that is controlled by his eyes since losing the ability to speak. I thought I would finish reading the article in floods of tears, but the overwhelming feeling I was left with was normality, and that surprised me. Burrow and his family are going through something that most of us cannot imagine. but normality continues, and that's how they want it. There is laughter in their house when we probably expect only tears. It obviously isn't an easy situation, but seeing the Burrows get on with life made me think this is how it should be. When we normalise death, we free ourselves from the shadow it can cast over our lives. Facing up to our protection needs is a big part of that.
That's it for today. Thank you very much for joining us. I do hope you didn't find it too distressing. If you would like to read any of our weekend essay series, they are available on the moneymarketing.co.uk website under the features tab. Of course, you can also keep listening on Apple, Podbean, Spotify, or directly from the Money Marketing website. We've achieved a remarkable more than 30,000 downloads since we launched this last year, so thank you very much for tuning in. It does mean a lot to us. If there's anything you would like us to cover in the future, please do get in touch with one of the team and we would be happy to look into that. Don't forget you can follow us on LinkedIn and Twitter to keep up with all the latest as well, and to sign up for our newsletter if you want stuff delivered to your inbox every day. Thank you. Bye-bye.